Welcome to the second installment of our 10 Days of Oscars here on The Cinephiles with me, the outlaw John Rocha, and my co-host on The Cinephiles, the great Steve Morris. How are you, Steve?
I'm very good, and I'm looking forward to Oscars. I'm looking forward to talking about all these films. I think it's a really interesting year, so I'm doing great.
Yeah, he is the Paul Giamatti to my Dominic Sessa, mostly on The Cinephiles.
I hope my smell is a little bit better.
You smell fine. You've got no smell issues at all, for sure. But your intellect is very strong, and it's always a fun part of our shows. And for those of you who may be new and stumbling upon this conversation, we appreciate it very madly. We are The Cinephiles, and what we do is break down one classic film, great film, good film, film we love, every week on our podcasts, which you can get on any platform, The Cinephiles, Cine-Files. It is on any podcast platform. We've been doing it for 8 years, but we thought this time around we'd bring back something we did a couple of years ago, which is our 10 Days of Oscars. So every day we're dropping about a 20 to 30 minute conversation about the Best Picture nominees, because we are The Cinephiles and we love movies. And we thought this is a great way to talk about movies that the Academy has dubbed important enough for that particular year, so for us to give our 2 cents in. And today we're talking about The Holdover, Steve, this reuniting of Alexander Payne, the director there, and Paul Giamatti, the star, who they had done Sideways together. And this one is an interesting film set in the winter of 1970 to 1971, over that Christmas holiday, with Paul Giamatti as a strict classics teacher at a New England boarding school, who is forced to chaperone a handful of students with nowhere to go. Divine Joy Randolph and Dominic Sessa play the school cafeteria manager and one of the students who stays on campus. So, Steve, talk to me about your thoughts on this film, The Holdovers.
Well, the first thing, I'm just, one of the reasons I'm so excited about this year of movies is it feels like we've gone back to having movies of a whole bunch of different genres that, you know, that Hollywood hasn't been exploring as much over the last decade. And it's like, you know, we just did Maestro, which is the intellectual artsy, you know, film that we used to get films like that. Haven't seen a lot of this. And this one, I'll tell you something very silly.
Please.
But when I saw the trailer, I was so excited, because the trailer, I was like, I understand exactly what kind of movie they are trying to make here. You know what I mean? Right. And that the trailer had that 70s look, and it had, it just obeyed all those things. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a 70s character exploration of flawed, difficult people who are going to come to force to be together, and they're going to learn important life lessons as they have conflict and then expose themselves emotionally, and it's going to be funny, and I'm in. And I saw all of that in the trailer, and I think that the movie delivered exactly what it was selling. That was my reaction to it.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, because you look at the picture here with the trailer of him screaming as the trailer ends. And you're right, Steve. We're of that age where we've seen some of these films from the 1970s, some of these great quiet character studies with these unusual, quirky, and interesting characters. And you're right. We absolutely got that in this movie. And it was so much fun to explore this here with Paul Giamatti and Dominic Sessa. Their relationship, their chemistry together. Initially, it's him with a bunch of the boys, but then eventually it becomes him with just Dominic Sessa, and the conversations that they have and the things that they go through. And this could have easily fallen into stereotype, fallen into some kind of maudlin thing, and we've seen this before. But what I liked about this approach is that it zigged when I thought it was going to zag, and it yanged when I thought it was going to ying. And I appreciated that throughout the movie here. And I was constantly kept on my toes, not because it's a thriller or anything like that, but because I liked this intellectual back and forth between Dominic Sessa and Paul Giamatti's character, and how Paul Giamatti, at times you caught yourself in the audience seeing his point of view, agreeing with the things he was doing, and then having it thrown in your face because he didn't know the full story, nor did we, about this kid's background, this kid's story with his parents, with his family. And there was so much we explored throughout this movie that I thought was fun to see in unwrapping the layers, or as Shrek and Donkey might say, the onions have a lot of layers. We're unwrapping the onions all the way to the core of both of these characters. And it was a lot of fun to see. What did you think about their relationship and these two performances and these two characters?
Well, the first thing I love that we're going back to a world where it's like, we can have a character who's our main character, the central focus of the film, who's a jerk.
Yes.
You know, who is just like, and just as you say, you can agree with him a little bit, like, you know, are the kids kind of goofing off? Are some of the things that he's observing happening?
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
But he's such an asshole. He's just so and what we learn as we go along that it's because he's so deeply unhappy and so deeply wounded that he's just doubled down on my way or the highway. It's perfection or nothing. Everybody else is a loser. And then what happens, and this is, it is, it's so funny because I like what you said, is that it zigged when we thought it was going to zag.
Yeah.
And yet it fulfills exactly the promise of its premise. Do you know what I mean? Is like, is that we can't predict exactly where it's going to go, but it is these two characters and three, too, with
Devonjoy Randolph. Yes.
Devonjoy Randolph, who is fantastic, is like, we see these broken people and that they are going to bump up against each other and they're going to hurt each other and they're going to not understand each other and they're going to heal each other on some level.
Yeah.
And that was what was so, and you could look at behaviors of them and just go, oh, why are you doing that? Particularly Paul Giamatti's character. Yeah. And yet still feel deep sympathy. And there's so many moments where you see that little spark of connection. And you know, the first one with Devonjoy Randolph, where like he comes down and she just offers him a drink and then they're just watching TV together. And you're like,
yeah,
this is just more connection for Paul Giamatti's character than he's probably had in a long, long time, you know?
Yeah. And it seems like there's a history between them and that she knows.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right. What he's been about. He was probably very like kind to her and like he wasn't dismissive of her or whatever. He probably actually expressed sadness about the death of her son or whatever, probably met her son. Like there is a connection. It isn't that he was a great friend and came over all the time. Right. It's not that. It's that there was a professional courtesy and a professional respect between them because she was no nonsense and he was an asshole. So somewhere there in the Venn diagram that can cross over and you can create some semblance of a rudimentary friendship within the constructs of a school like that. So I appreciated their case. Yeah. And just the fact that he didn't know what the newlywed game was, I thought was a fantastic scene to show you how out of touch and how caught up in his books and caught up in his learning is, because that's been his refuge. That's been the place he has gone to as a shield, as an armor against the world. This is a place I understand. This is a place that doesn't fuck me over. This is a place that doesn't screw me for tenure or make me pay for my mistake that I made from a good intention, as we find out later on in the movie. And the same for her. Like Devonjoy Randolph hides in that kitchen, hides in what she knows, hides in what she's doing, and then the break happens later on at that party for her. Yeah.
So I totally want to comment on everything you say, but I just thought of a complete digression. It has nothing to do with anything, except it's a story that I've never told you, I'm sure, which is you mentioned the Newlywed Game.
Okay.
There was another lesser game. Maybe it was mostly in the Bay Area. I think it was called the Honeymoon Game.
Okay.
And much of the furniture in my family room growing up came from my parents' appearance on this game show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which I've never seen.
Oh my gosh.
And my dad, it was a similar game where you had to like say things about the other person. And my dad went over strategy and wrote down notes with my mom so they would go on, and they were one question away from the car. They didn't win the car. Anyway, total digression, but it's just popped into my brain.
Yeah, I'd like to find footage of that.
I would love to find footage of it. I wonder if it exists somewhere. Anyway, so back to what you're saying. I love what you said about the Venn diagram of she's no nonsense and he's an asshole. And I think we can add to it that our young student, he's a pain in the ass.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And there is a Venn diagram where they all meet and kind of understand each other. And right. I think it's funny, you know, everything gets framed. Whatever I'm studying, I'm sure you have the same experience. Things get framed by things that you're in the middle of. Well, we're in the middle of Raging Bull. And Raging Bull, the main character of Raging Bull, this is not a guy that I like. And what Raging Bull continually says is, this guy, you might not like him. You might have all sorts of problems with all parts of his behavior, but he is worth your time.
Yes.
And I think that Paul Giamatti is worth our time.
Yeah.
All these people are worth our, that's what this movie is saying, is that there's real heart here and there's real humanity here and there's real pain here and intelligence and caring. We just have to get to it. And I think that's what's so great about this movie.
Yeah. This is kind of your mantra with a lot of things. You know, I'm much more the emotional guy. I'm much more the reactionary guy. For those of you who follow me on Twitter, you know, that. It is much more of the, like, we need to understand each other and find the common ground and figure out where we can coexist, which I think is a very great way to be, you know, and I think it's an awesome way to be. And sometimes I am that way because I do care about human beings. I love to talk to people. I love to get to know people. I love to hear their stories. I'm such a fan. I mean, I get so much crap from the Lady Outlaw, because I talk to everybody when we go out to places, and because I just enjoy talking. That's why I host so many shows. I just enjoy talking about things with people, at either strangers or friends, you know. And so it's so much fun. And but part of that is discovering the people underneath, right? And I think, yeah, this movie, as you said, does a really great job of presenting these three characters. And look, Divine Joy Randolph comes off as someone you'd want to know.
Yeah.
I think of the three, she seems the person, yes, you'd initially want to get to know more, but she also serves at times as the barrier between them to help them to understand each other, Dominic Sessa and Paul Giamatti's characters, so that they can find some kind of common ground, because I'm sure she's dealt with a lot of boys in her time at the cafeteria who've had their issues, who've had their ways of behavior, and has picked out the ones that have something good underneath. She can tell. And so she has, she facilitates this union of them, and even has a wonderful moment with Dominic Sessa near the end of the movie where she connects with him from, yeah, the place of pain, both of them having lost someone in their lives, really special and important to them, her son, him, his dad, because he's in the mental institution. So you see these senses of connection. And it's true, when you strip away the barriers, most people have this really human part of the, and I mean that in an emotional way and a heart way, like there's something underneath all the pain and anger and defensiveness and walls and shields, that if you could get to that point, you'd actually find a way to appreciate a person in such a different way, you know.
I'm going to say something, and maybe this will be too personal, and but it just has occurred to me as you've been talking. You started by saying that I was, you know, had this sort of look at the other perspective, yeah, sort of thing, which is certainly true, and I appreciate that, and that you tend to be a little bit more reactionary. But this, yeah, is the thing, that, and you said that you like to talk to people. The world that you've created in Outlaw Nation, and what you've, yeah, been willing to do is you've exposed a lot of really personal and painful stuff, true, and that actually has created an environment where other people felt really comfortable to do that. So yeah, maybe, yeah, you are more reactionary than I am. I think that's probably true. But, yeah, you also have done kind of what this movie is doing, is that by exposing yourself a little more, you created, yeah, a space where other people could feel comfortable being more honest about who they were. And I think going, yeah, back to, you know, this character of, yeah, this cook,
yeah,
who, as you said, is continually making space for these people, yeah, that are more difficult. Yeah. The thing that I think happens is that, and maybe she's more like me in this sense, is that she's eating her own tragedy so much.
Yeah.
By making space for other people, that then you come to this point at this Christmas party where she just, yeah, breaks, you know? And, yeah, so like the, I think that the different approaches, and I'm not saying that I'm her or that you're Paul Giamatti. I don't think, right, there's any one-to-one comparisons.
I think
here,
we can connect, but certainly we're not these people for sure.
But, yeah, yeah, exactly. But like the, oh, this movie is finding ways to make space for people's pain. And, yeah, it is not saying that these people at the end are all healed and better.
Yeah.
It's not saying Paul Giamatti's not still going to be a jerk and an arrogant guy. Sometimes he totally is. Yeah. But it is saying that it's kind of looking at the real world. And I'll tell you that, you know, it's just, I always think about like, well, what does a movie need to deliver on? And this movie didn't need to deliver on what Oppenheimer needs to deliver on.
Right.
It didn't need to deliver what Barbie needs to deliver. It didn't need to deliver what Maestro needs to deliver. Mm. What this movie needed to deliver was for me to feel deep connection to these characters,
yeah,
to love them, to laugh a lot, which, because it's a really funny movie.
It is a funny movie.
And then when it's going to hit me, I'm going to cry. And I was, yeah, crying like a fool multiple times in this movie at exactly the places the movie wanted me to, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. You know, when he sees his dad in the mental institution, that destroyed me. When Divine joined Randolph, as you said, when she loses it in the kitchen there, finally letting us in, the audience in, as well as everybody else there, into the pain, as you said, that she's been carrying or eating here from the loss of her son. I thought that was an incredible performance all around, obviously, through the whole movie. But that's the moment, you know, that you see why you cast someone of such immense talent like Divine Joy Randolph.
She's
to deliver,
good,
right? To deliver, yeah, the levels and the nuance of that scene. And then later with Paul Giamatti, when he finally tells Dominic Sessa, like, what was going on and what happened in the past. When, I think when they're in Chicago, one of the big cities there, and he runs into his old friend from back then and explains what the issue was between them. And that's, those moments of surrender are so beautiful. And as you get older, and both of us are older now, like, you kind of appreciate those moments even more in movies, because you've been through the wars of your life. You've been through the struggles and the pain. And I connected with him in the new love and the new and the girl. Are you looking down my shirt? I've been that kid, you know, who's been called out and embarrassed because he finds her attractive but doesn't know how to talk to her. I've been Divine Joanne Randolph, you know, the first time you lose it because you can't control your pain about someone you just lost in a public space. And I've been Paul Giamatti, the guy who gets fucked over by a friend in his career and is upset about it still. And so I know all those places that they go to, but at the heart of this movie is this idea of connected pain, and that all of us, and I think that's the message coming out of the movie for me, is that all of us have this pain. And if we spent more time getting to know each other's pain and accepting each other's pain and giving positive responses to people's pain, we can find what they find at the end of the movie, which is a bit of a acceptance of the pain and an understanding of what the pain has caused them in their life and how to maybe navigate that pain better as they go forward in the future. As you say, not healed, but certainly much more self-aware now going forward.
Just because it just popped in my mind, there's one moment, I won't spoil what it is, but there's one moment in the movie where Paul Giamatti and Dominic Cesso have a realization that they're dealing with the same thing.
Yes.
That they have a similarity. And I just think that moment is so profound because I just, you know, we tend to look at ourselves as these like isolated things, and these other humans like have it figured out, and they're somehow different from us, as opposed to, no, we're all dealing with this fucked up stuff. And I think the thing that you said, it's like, it isn't, I think one of the things I was hung up on as a younger, more arrogant, less, you know, maybe self-aware dude who hadn't been hurt as much, I think, was I just thought, you know, oh, well, that person thinking that, they're just wrong. They shouldn't be feeling that feeling because they're wrong. You know, like, why are they hung up on this thing? And of course, it might be true that someone shouldn't be so hung up on a thing, or that feeling that they're having is not productive for their lives. And that might be true. But what I wasn't doing was creating space for people to feel what they feel.
Yeah.
You know, and just going, and it took me a long time and a lot of like thought and realization to go like, oh, the feeling they're having is the feeling they're having.
Yeah.
That is real. You know, whether or not I think they should be feeling that thing or should be as sad as they are or whatever, that's beside the point.
Yeah.
They are having this feeling. And I think what this movie does so well is accepting that these people who are who they are and their things they're feeling are real and that they, you know, and yes, they're all their own worst enemy at some point, but they need the space to feel what they feel in order to cease to be their own worst enemy. You know, and the things that happens a little bit in this film.
Yeah, for sure. Even a Dominic Cesso, who initially seems like, oh, he's got all the judgment correct on Paul Giamatti's character, what we see later on in the film and how he understands him differently, how he sees him differently, I think is a really powerful moment as well. Let's talk about Dominic Cesso as a performer. This is one of his, I think this is his first project. His
first movie,
What are your thoughts on Dominic Cesso and his performance in this movie and what we got from him as we went along in the film and the levels he was able to bring to this character? And then by the end, the emotion and the strength and the power that he facilitated or that he showed throughout the film and the relationship he facilitated here with Paul Giamatti's character.
It's stunning to me that this is his first movie.
Yeah.
I would never, ever, ever have thought that. He seems so natural. And not only that, the casting, I don't understand why people from different eras look different. You know, when you look at photographs of people from the, you know, here's the college football team in the 20s. And you go, those people look like they're 40 years old. They're totally different. Like, what is happening? He looks like a person from this era.
100%.
He looks 100%. Exactly like he could be in the movie Breaking Away or something. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, or My Bodyguard or, you know, one of those like movies that I grew up. That's what he looks like. And what's so great about his character and the way he performs it is you get a sense of who he is early on and kind of feel for him. And then that really evolves and changes as more and more gets exposed about him. You know what I mean? Yeah. He manages to present a facade, which seems really real. And then you kind of dig in and find these other things. I think it's an amazing premiere performance.
Yeah, and it's a performance that vacillates in status as the film goes along, which I think is very difficult to do, especially for your first time out as an actor, going toe-to-toe with someone like Paul Giamatti or Divine Joy Randolph or the assorted actors that are in the movie. It's incredible to watch his work, and I was just blown away by this and just sat there feeling like, man, that's, some people just have that natural ability and you can't help but appreciate that, marvel at that. And certainly we saw that throughout the movie. What about Paul Giamatti, man? Talk to me about Paul Giamatti in this movie. We know he's been a fantastic character actor for many, many years, occasional lead in things, as I mentioned earlier, like Sideways, but certainly other films as well. What did you feel about Paul Giamatti's performance here? And, you know, a lot of people think it's either him or Cillian Murphy as we're recording this just before the Oscars air in just a couple of hours.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Has he ever not been good, very good to great?
No, I've never seen Paul Giamatti deliver, even in a small role like Truman Show. Yeah. He is believable in what he does in that film. And so I've never not seen him deliver a fantastic performance. And when he talks about acting, there's a real deep humility to it, which lets you understand how serious he takes every single role he does because he cares about it. Even in that crazy, with a young film where they douse him in blue paint for one of those young kids. I can't remember the name of the film right now, but yeah, he, even in that, he's believable. Or in Private Parts with Howard Stern, he's certainly believable as Pig Vomit. He's great.
Or like just playing the driver and Saving Mr. Banks. It's like a real nothing part that he makes. So the answer to your question is, of course he's great. He's always great. I think this role in particular, and did you listen to his interview? He was on Marc Maron recently.
Oh, no, I haven't listened to that one yet.
You should. You should.
Okay.
Because it's one where they obviously just totally hit it off and were like,
that's great.
Like best buds instantly. It's a great, great conversation. And this relates a lot. I think his father was a professor. He went to a New England sort of boarding school. So that relates a lot to his experience. And I just, it's so funny. I don't think he's a flashy actor in a lot of ways, but I think he fully embraces who this person is.
Yeah.
Totally gets who this person is and manages to, it's not easy to play the lovable asshole. You know what I mean? Like, it's not easy to play someone who's just being a total jerk through and totally insensitive through much of the film. And yet you have deep, deep feeling for him. No, he's fantastic. Of course. I mean, it's like I was looking, it's funny. We're recording a couple of episodes before the Oscars and we record the rest of them. They will have happened and we'll have all these answers. But I was looking at the best actor and it's like, I have not seen Colman Domingo. I have not seen that performance.
Right, right.
But all the other performances, Bradley Cooper, Cillian Murphy, Jeffrey Wright, any of them win the Oscar, they're totally worthy of an Oscar. Giamatti's completely worthy of an Oscar in this movie. Yeah. I don't think that he'll win it, but if he did, I would not be mad, you know?
Yeah. Neither would I, absolutely. And that's the thing, I think you put it really well. He was able to create a character that was sympathetic without being pitiful. Like hurt without being pitiful. And I kind of like that. And we saw him navigate some really tough moments, not just the situations with the kids and the back and forth with Sessa as the film goes along, but also in that scene with the woman he thinks he's going to have a relationship with and find out that, of course, he wasn't in contention. He misread all the signs. He thought she was giving a certain sign, but she wasn't. And he has to sit with that embarrassment in that moment. And how Giamatti plays that is incredible. When he reveals the stuff that happened to him in the past, it's incredible. When he's having the conversation with the head of the school and having the back and forth with him and calling him out when he used to be a student, all of that, all those moments are delivered with great instincts and fantastic nuance that makes you love what he did as well. We've talked about Divine already, so we'll move past that. Let's talk about the directing here. Alexander Payne, we haven't seen a film from him in quite some time. Steve, what were your feelings about how he directed this movie? Wasn't nominated for Best Director, which to me is a fucking crime. What did you think about him overall as a director in this film?
Well, first of all, can you and I call up the Academy and just say it's stupid to nominate 10 pictures and 5 directors?
Yes.
Because every year we're going to have this situation. It's just stupid. It is a stupid thing.
For 2 years now, man.
I mean, I understand that sometimes there's going to be a movie that gets nominated for Best Picture and doesn't get the director nod. I understand that. I think it's pretty weird because really the director is the central figure in making a movie in general.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I mean, because what it means is that every single year we're going to have the same conversation about snubs, and it's stupid. So let's just change this rule. I think the cinephiles have voted for it, so I don't understand why the Academy won't follow suit. I think it goes right to this experience I had watching the trailer. I went, this director knows exactly the kind of movie that they're going to make, and everything is contributing to making that particular kind of movie, down to like creating 70s versions of like the Focus Features logo and like all of those things, the look of the film. You know, they looked at what it's actually shot digitally, but they looked at all of this 70s filmmaking, the kinds of lenses they were using. They did all this stuff to make it look and feel. It's really interesting because it's not a period piece in the sense of most period pieces.
Yeah.
Most period pieces are like we're reviewing Shogun and there's a 1980s version of Shogun and there's today's version of Shogun. And the 1980s version of Shogun looks like a 1980s version of 1600 Japan.
Right.
And now this one is a 2024 version of 1600s Japan.
Yeah.
What Alexander Payne set out to do was to do a 1970s movie that was like a 1970s movie, not a 2024 version of what that period looked like, but how filmmakers at that time were filming things that were happening at that time.
Yeah.
It is a current movie. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And everything, every camera move, the film stock, everything that they did, or not film stock because it's digital, the design, the hairstyles, the makeup styles, all that stuff made you feel like it was completely in this world.
Yeah.
So all of it from production design through cinematographer, through the camera work, through the performances, through the way things are staged. I think Alexander Payne showed it in some ways. I haven't seen every Alexander Payne movie, but stylistically, I think this might be his most complete film. That's my feeling about it.
Wow. Yeah. That's a strong statement. Yeah. Yeah. I thought his direction here was stellar. And again, I've only ever seen one bad Alexander Payne film, and that's Downsizing. Now, all the other ones were great. Nebraska, The Descendants, Sideways, About Schmidt, Election, Citizen Ruth. That's a murderer's row. I mean,
that's a great, it's a great list.
If you look at the resume, that's a hell of a resume from 1996 to now in terms of the quality and the level of quality in those films. And a lot of them got people nominated for awards. So that tells you something about how he works with actors and brings out the great performances from these actors, which is also an essential part of directing. So yes, I agree with you, Steve. The cinematographer here, I think Egil Brild, I think is his name, is a Danish cinematographer. I hope I'm saying that right. But he's done a number of things over the last few years. Great eye he had for this, along with Alexander Payne. But wait, Alexander Payne sets everything. And you're right, the costume design, the look of everything, like even parking outside in the 1970s, what that street looks like was dressed so perfectly. So you were never out of the movie, you know, and I love that you said that every single place they went felt very lived in, felt even the mental institution felt like what you would think a 1970s mental institution might look like for a city like that. So everything about the direction, the pacing here, the way he was setting the camera for certain movements, certain shots, the comical shots, the more emotional shots, the close-up shots the way he sets that camera when Divine Joan Randolph is losing it in the kitchen, it is like we're standing in the kitchen with her, leaning against the wall, having a drink ourselves, watching this happen. And so there's really smart tactics that he uses throughout the whole movie to make you feel like you're both in the scene and outside the scene as well, which I think adds to the enjoyment of the film overall. And I thought the music here by Mark Orton did a nice job, Steve. It's kind of a subtle score. It's not something you're going to write home about, but I liked and enjoyed the comical beats within the score, along with the emotional, the touching moments within the score, and the adventurous moments when they're going and breaking the rules and going into the city and all of that. I really enjoyed the score as well.
You know, one of my favorite books on film directing is Sidney Lumet's book, Making Movies. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he says is the job of the director is to get everybody making the same film. And he says that sounds like an easy thing, but it's actually really, really hard. That everybody, you've got a couple hundred people, you got actors, you got writers, you got technicians, you got craftsmen, you got people building costumes, people building sets, people working on cinematography, composers sitting alone in his studio coming up with music. You have all this stuff going on, and have them all pointing in the same direction. Yeah. That's really hard, and that's the real job of the director, and that's where Alexander Payne succeeds, because you're right about the score. The score's not jumping out at you because it's not supposed to. It's not that kind of movie.
Right.
They knew this is the kind of movie that we're trying to make. And I think they, you know, it's funny, you know, we got the Oscars tonight. I think we all have a pretty good sense of what's going to win Best Picture. And that's the movie that I think should win Best Picture.
Right.
But if you look at just like top to bottom, do they completely succeed in this film? I think they completely succeed in this film.
Yeah, and just like you said a couple of minutes ago, if either the film that we think is going to win or this film won Best Picture, I'd be happy either way.
Yeah.
Because both of them certainly deserve it. And it's also nominated for Best Actor for Paul Giamatti, Best Supporting Actress for Divine Joy Randolph, and everyone thinks that's pretty much the odds-on favorite to win. Best Original Screenplay from David Hemmingsing, and Best Editing from Kevin Tent. And we should say, I know this story has popped up in the last few days about possible plagiarism. We are not in any way, shape, or form equipped at this point to have that discussion or come down in either way. I'm sure it'll be exposed. I've seen people say it's crap. I've seen other people say it's troubling. So I think I can safely say that for both of us that we are not going to offer opinion on this because we are not as steeped in the knowledge of both sides of these or read the other script to make a comment on it. This is just talking about these films that are nominated for Best Pictures. So that's another video maybe you want to watch. But we are not going to do that here. All right, final thoughts, Steve, on the holdovers here, unless you just gave them, and then I'll give my final thoughts as we wrap up.
I think I mostly gave them, but I'll just add to that, this is totally my kind of movie. You know, it really is. As soon as I saw the trailer to seeing the movie, I'm like, yeah, I'm into this, and I hope we get more of these in the future.
I agree with that 100% and everything you said over the last couple of minutes about this film. And look, we're looking at 2024, Steve, or 2023. We're not going to be able to talk about this film possibly for another 10 years, but there's a lot of films from this year, Steve, that would be qualified automatically to be discussed on the Cinephiles. And I think near the top of that pile is absolutely The Holdovers. Incredible script, fantastic performances, great direction, and a very enjoyable score, and an overall message here, and some great technical filmmaking displayed throughout the movie as well. This is one that is worth your time to watch if you haven't watched it. And if you have watched it again, it is worth going back to rewatch multiple times to really appreciate the nuances within each of these scenes and the work being done to bring about the overall emotional arcs with all of these three characters and the things they're experiencing throughout the movie. So we highly recommend it to you all. Well, thanks so much for watching this video here on our second day of our 10 days of Oscars. Let us know what you thought about The Holdovers down in the comments section below, what you thought about Steve's points of views and opinions and perspective on all this, and what you thought about my perspective on all of this. We appreciate and love to hear from you all. What are your thoughts on everything in the film? Let us know down there. And of course, some of you will have already seen the Oscars by now. Do you agree with what happened or not agree with what happened with Holdovers categories? Let us know down there. Steve, another wonderful conversation with you, brother. Please let people know where they can find you and where they can find everything we do here on the Cinephiles.
I will, but before I do that, I have a crazy offer to make, and this is an offer to the Academy.
Ooh,
here it is. And okay. I haven't cleared this with my partner, but I think that he will agree.
Okay.
If the Academy listens to the Cinephiles and switches the director category to 10 nominations instead of 5, I think we should promise to do a full Cinephiles deep dive on whatever wins the Best Picture this year. Break all our rules. All right. So you hear the offer's out there, Academy. Listen to the Cinephiles and we will break our 10-year rule.
Let's make it happen. Let's make it happen, for God's sakes. But then tell us where they can find you.
Sure, they can reach me at SR Morris on Twitter, SR Morris 1 on Instagram, the Cinephiles, patreon.com/thecinephiles, where you can get ad-free versions of our shows, including this one, listen to our shorts, listen to our Cinephiles watch along, join the advisory board and help chart the course of the Cinephiles. And we have just added, if you're an Apple person and not into the whole Patreon thing, the ad-free versions of the shows and all our Cinephile shorts are now available for a paid subscription. They're not all there yet. We're working on getting everything up there. Paid subscription on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to buy or stream any of the movies we reviewed in the regular show, that's at cinephiles.net.
There you go. As for me, it's at The Roca Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/JohnRocaSays. And my other podcasts, which are out there, The Geek Buddies and The Hot Mic, for you all to enjoy and subscribe to as well. But please subscribe to The Cinephiles and take a chance on us. If it's the first time you're stumbling upon us, go and listen to our podcast, which you can download wherever you download podcasts. Pick a film that you love, because odds are we probably talked about numerous films that you love, and take a chance on our show. We guarantee you we'll hook you in with our conversations, which are much more extensive than the half an hour conversation we just had on The Holdovers. All right, enjoy the Oscars, or we hope you enjoyed the Oscars, and we'll talk to you tomorrow with another brand new episode here from the 10 Days of Oscars, brought to you by the Cinephiles. Take care until then. Peace.